This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
That's beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top.
Wow.
And here comes his submission. And it's all over. It's
nice.
All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome in to this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast right here on RadioInfluence.com. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by my colleague at TheMMAReport.com, Daniel Galvan, as we are going to preview Sunday's UFC Fight Night 124. Plus, we're going to talk about everything else going on in the world of MMA. I do have one interview here on the podcast this week. Going to let you hear my conversation with Jalen Turner. Had him on the podcast before. He is going to be fighting next Saturday, Bellator 192. He'll be a part of that preliminary card. So that interview will come up here later on the podcast. And at the end of the podcast, myself and Daniel will talk about Friday's LFA 30, which, of course, will be on Access TV from Costa Mesa, California. Daniel, how's it going, man?
It's going quite well, Jason. I'm a little groggy after a long, long weekend. It does feel as though 2018, we're finally getting into gear. We've already had our break. I understand that you are an individual who works every day, 24/7, 365. But as a college student, Jason, now my year begins as I begin to sober up and start to cut down on my buffalo wing intake. So I will only be eating buffalo wings two or three times per week instead of seven per week.
So
how about you?
It was a nice, relaxing weekend. I actually kind of took the weekend off, did a lot of my work on Friday over the weekend, and I was probably like a lot of people, just sat on my couch, watched a lot of football with the NFL playoffs, and then on Monday night, of course, recording this here on Tuesday, early afternoon, late morning, you know, watch that great college football game. And no, it was a nice, relaxing weekend for me. And, you know, I was thinking before we started recording this podcast, like, I know it's only been 2 weeks since we had a UFC event, but it feels like a lot longer.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a really refreshing month of mixed martial arts between the break we had between UFC 219 and this Fight Night card. And then we're going to have another similar break, not as long given the fact that the Fight Night card's on a Sunday, but we're going to have 2 weeks to digest UFC 220. I think this may be the most refreshing month of mixed martial arts we're going to have all year, because it's not like super oversaturated. And personally, obviously UFC 220 has a main event I think both of us are so enthused about. I think this Fight Night card has a pair of fights that I'm really looking forward to from like an entertainment standpoint. So I think this is going to be probably the most fun month of mixed martial arts, where it doesn't necessarily feel like a chore because it is refreshing to have a little bit of a break instead of just jamming down all the MMA. And as you kind of look at the dates moving forward, there are so many cards, and it seems as though the quantity of cards has kind of affected the quality of these main cards. But yeah, man, moral of the story is, it has felt like a very long time since we last saw Cyborg get her hand raised against Holly Holm.
Yeah, I mean, that was only 2 weeks ago. We did have a question about Cyborg that we're going to get into here in a little bit. But when you look at the rest of this month, of course, on Sunday, I did get a tweet. Someone was like, hey, why are they doing a Sunday card? And I had no idea where the person lived. And I said, well, Monday is a federal holiday. And they responded, well, not a federal holiday in Canada, but here in the United States, it is a federal holiday on Monday. And then, of course, 6 days later, we have Bellator 192, UFC 220. Then 6 days after that, we've got Bellator 193. And then the following night is the first Fox card of the year there in North Carolina. I was actually looking at the Ticketmaster seating chart. Looks like UFC doing very well with tickets there in North Carolina. Of course, here in my home state of Florida, if you do live in Florida and you're looking to go to that UFC on Fox event in Orlando, tickets do go on sale this week. As we're recording this podcast, the UFC has not announced the main event for that fight card, which is kind of weird, the fact of tickets go on sale this week. So you have to think that, you know, a main event is going to be announced here. We do know it's definitely not going to be Jimmy Rivera, as he came out on Monday of this week and, you know, said, hey, he's doing his honeymoon, so he's not going to fight in the month of February. So we'll see what happens there. And by the way, speaking of the MMA here in Florida, did get it confirmed to me on Tuesday after hearing some rumblings on Monday that Frank Gentile is out as the assistant executive director of the Florida State Boxing Commission. I'm sure for a lot of people outside of the state of Florida, they have no idea who Frank is. Frank is also the vice president of the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports. And, you know, he was really the guy, you know, at the events that was handling everything. You know, for a while now, the executive director of the Florida Commission has essentially been the business guy. And so you're really interesting to see with the UFC coming to town, how that kind of affects that event. But, you know, when I look at this fight card on Sunday, Daniel, I get a mixed bag here from the MMA fans of whether they like this event, whether they don't like this event. Overall, I like this event, but I feel like I'm in the minority in that.
Yeah, maybe the amount of fights on this card will scare one off, because if you look long enough at this card, you can find enough fights that get you disinterested that the idea of sitting through this 13-fight card, yeah, I did my math right, this 13-fight card is a little taxing. But if you take a look at some of these fights individually, let's not even look at the main card, which I'm actually a really big fan of this main card. I'm really looking forward to watching Thiago Alves take on Zach Cummings. I'm really looking forward to a fight between James Krause and Alex White that I think is going to be a barn burner, an absolutely fantastic fight, hypothetically. And most of all, the main event for the prelims, Darren Elkins and Michael Johnson at featherweight. That, to me, is a really important fight. You get to see Michael Johnson move down in a way, a guy who's had some success at lightweight, but that's been stifled against taking on fighters like Justin Gaethje. And he's going up against a fighter in Darren Elkins who is very much the, I don't want to say like the illegitimate son of Nick Lentz, but he, to me, has taken the Nick Lentz reputation to the next level at featherweight. A fighter who seemingly has the ability to piece together like 47 fight win streaks and not get any credit. He's riding into this fight with Michael Johnson with several wins in a row. So just looking at those three prelim fights, I'm looking forward to those fights, Jason. Also, like, I'm not super well aware, maybe you are, of Matt Frivola, a guy from Florida.
Yeah. He actually literally trains not that far away from my house here at Gracie South. He's a guy who obviously came through the Contender Series. I remember I was talking to a manager about this within the past couple weeks, and we were talking about this card and particularly Matt Frivola, and we said, like, we don't understand why the UFC put him on this card. I think it would have made a lot more sense to put him on the Orlando card, you know, local, you know, somewhat of a local guy. You know, they are having a local guy, Mike Perry, on that fight card, but kind of an odd one. But, you know, this is a fight card that, look, I love a four-fight main card. I wish every main card was four fights, personally, just because, you know, the fight card, we only have four fights, really doesn't seem to drag at all. But I do like the TV prelims as well. You know, Kamaru Usman, I mean, you know, sign me up to watch this guy fight. I still think it's a very odd fight for him, taking on Emil Meek. You know, Kamaru's manager, Ali Abdelaziz, has said in interviews and has tweeted that, you know, look, there's just not guys who are ready to take a fight against Kamaru, and for obvious reasons. So, and he has said, he goes, hey, kudos to Emil Meek for stepping up and taking this fight. I think for the people who are down on this fight card, I think a lot of that has to do with the co-main event, you know, just people just not all in. But, you know, you started at the beginning of this podcast talking about, you know, from an entertainment value, there's some fights that, you know, could deliver. And the co-main event is probably that. It's a fight that probably doesn't get out of the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it may be a really important fight because it may, in fact, be the last time we will ever see Vitor Belfort fight. I mean, he's been saying that since a very long time. I think he said that before the Nate Marquardt fight. He's coming off that victory. But I honestly think this could be his last fight if Uriah Hall knocks him out, which is like a high probability. I think Uriah Hall and Vitor Belfort are going to come out here, and they both do something really well. They hit each other. They hit their opponents really hard. And the biggest problem for them is they also get hit really hard. So I think this is going to have a really nice flow to the card. I really do. I think the top two fights are well worth the watch, even if you DVR the card. I think Uriah Hall, Vitor Belfort is likely going to be – it's going to be hard for Stevens and Du Ho Choi to, I think, usurp the Belfort-Hall fight, I think, when it comes to what we're talking about afterwards. Because I think there's – there's a great chance Choi and Stevens is going to be a just a dope fight, just a fantastic fight. Mm-hmm. But I do think that one may just go to the distance, and Hall Belfort, I think, is going to have some type of really dramatic, definitive outcome, and that may be the storyline. And I just think Vitor, this is okay for the fans. This is the perfect opponent for Vitor because you're likely guaranteed an exciting contest. Mm-hmm. But for a fighter who's, you know, this is going to be his 26th contest in the UFC, I believe. This is a very bad fight for his health because, Jesus, you're on your last leg and your opponent is a dynamic fighter like Uriah Hall. That's a recipe for just disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about, you know, making a pick for this fight, and it's like, which fighter do you have more faith in? You know, is it Vitor? Is he Uriah Hall? I mean, look, they're both up and down guys, and you look at, you know, what has happened for Vitor, you know, most recently. I mean, yes, he is coming off that decision win against Nate Marquardt. Prior to that, he had not won since November 7th of 2015. And when you look at Uriah Hall on the other side, as I mentioned, a guy that up and down, I mean, you know, prior to that win over Christoph Jocko back in September, he had lost three in a row. But, of course, those losses are to the current UFC middleweight champion Robert Whittaker, Derek Brunson, and Gegard Mousasi, so not bad loss at all, but I think that's a fight that will deliver for the fans. You know, I mentioned this to you in a text message yesterday. When I was looking at the betting odds for this, I was pretty floored to see Jeremy Stevens as an underdog.
This is a fight you anticipated him being the favorite against Duho Choi?
Yeah, I mean, it was surprising to me to see it, and, you know, and when I looked at the betting odds, I was like, okay, maybe Jeremy opened up as a favorite, you know, but did not appear that way. And, you know, I mean, you know, look, the last time we saw Duho Choi, it was a tremendous matchup against Cub Swanson. You know, one of the best fights of 2016 in all of MMA. But I looked at that, and maybe, you know, when we do this podcast next week, I'm going to sit here and say, man, was I dead wrong? But, I mean, this is another tough competition for Duho Choi, and I just was surprised to see that he was a betting favorite.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, because to put it simply, we haven't seen Duho Choi fight in a while, and also his most impressive victory is probably over Thiago Tavares. There is a bit of an unknown quantity to Duho Choi. With that being said, it's worth noting his fight against Cub Swanson was just probably the best fight that year, and it was really close. So the unknown quantity about Choi is it has been a long time since we've seen a fight. He hasn't had the opportunity to face consistently great competition. And on the flip side, you look at what Jeremy Stevens has done. He's coming off the victory over Gilbert Melendez, where he just kicked the leg out of Gilbert's leg. I mean, he kicked him so hard. And then his last two losses were really close fights against Renato Moicano and more impressively, Frankie Edgar. That one wasn't as close as the Moicano fight, but Jeremy did some nice things. And then he obviously has the win over Hinnan Burrell. So, simply put, Jeremy Stevens has shown that he can either be competitive or beat high-level fighters in his weight class, whereas Duho Choi is a fighter who has really flashed hardcore knockout potential, but against competition that leaves a bit more to be desired. So I also understand why Jeremy Stevens probably should be the favorite. This is a line I'd probably stay away from. But the more and more I think about this fight, I get excited about the idea of picking Duho Choi. And he will be my pick. But the one thing we saw when Duho Choi took on Cub Swanson is while Duho Choi is just a phenomenal counter striker, if you do a nice job of evading the counter strikes, which is way harder to do than I'm saying right now, and you just push Duho Choi backwards with your striking approach, that's kind of the key to beating Choi on the feet. And I think Jeremy Stevens has the ability to not get destroyed. But over five rounds, that's just, to me, too tough of a task for Jeremy Stevens.
And I think there's still a lot of questions about Duho Choi. What has he been doing the past year? I mean, that's kind of a little bit of an unknown. And, you know, you look at his wins in the UFC, none of those guys are still in the UFC.
Yeah, he only has three UFC victories. But to me, that speaks more to how long it's been since he's fought. Because if you begin to create distance from, you know, distance, the UFC roster dramatically changes. So I understand what you're saying. It's just that his stand-up looks almost otherworldly, and it's so violent, and it's one of those within an instant. I mean, his finishes over Cecilia and Tavares came so quickly. He entered the UFC with an 18-second knockout. It's like this is a fighter who is almost fighting with the rocks in his gloves. And when you lay out the rule set of he's going to have 25 minutes to hypothetically knock out Jeremy Stephens, you got to like that idea. But again, the questions are obvious. Lack of competition, lack of ring time. That's what he's going up against. And a fighter in Jeremy Stephens who is – such is like the veteran's veteran in this weight class, a guy who's been around for such a long time, and he has an ability to do like 100 things to Do Ho Choi. He's really well faceted, everything from maybe taking the fight in a different aspect to just on the feet, maybe not played aggressive, but just utilizes leg kicks. Like that could be a major factor, is Jeremy Stephens kicking the heck out of Do Ho Choi, kind of staying away from his rights. That would probably lead to a more boring fight if Jeremy doesn't engage in Do Ho Choi. But I do think Choi is the type of fighter where he's not going to be super aggressive again. He's going to be super reliant on his opponent being aggressive so he can land gangbusters.
I mean, think about this. Jeremy Stephens has been in the UFC since 2007. Do Ho Choi didn't make his pro debut till 2009. You know, and Jeremy Stephens is a guy who has been up and down in the UFC, but when you look at his loss in the UFC, it's all against top-notch competition, and I love how kind of you broke the fight down of how he has to win this fight, but it was something that was very interesting to me to kind of see how the betting public has gone there. I'm going with Jeremy Stephens to win the fight just because I look at him. I believe he has more ways to win the fight. But would it shock me if Do Ho Choi wins? Not the least bit.
Yeah, and Do Ho Choi. I'm picking Do Ho Choi in this fight, and I believe that it's worth noting that this you got to enjoy Do Ho Choi while we have him because I believe after this year he's going to go on like a 2-year military service.
Yeah, he's got his. Yeah, he's got the mandatory service. I believe he said he has to go in 1 year.
Jesus. So he's looking to make 2018 his year, and starting it out with a loss would not be it. I mean, imagine it would be cool for him, but what a like disaster it would be if Do Ho Choi wins like two fights and then wins the featherweight championship and then goes on a 2-year mandatory leave.
There's no way the UFC would put him in a title fight.
Yeah, I know. There's no way. But what if he wins so much that it has to happen? He must get it. But yeah, you're probably right. He would definitely do that. But yeah, at the end of the day, I hope Do Ho Choi, comes back, and it's gonna be like a nice little. It kind of stinks because we barely are getting Choi back, and it's almost like we're gonna lose him again. Anyways, this should be a great fight. I'm going to Choi. Not one I feel confident at all, given the obvious things we've already laid out, the lack of competition, lack of time, and also Jeremy Stephens, really freaking good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going with Stephens, but once again, it's kind of, in a way, a little bit of a coin flip fight, kind of like the co-main event. And for me, when I'm picking my co-main event here, it's about who do I have more faith in winning. And to me, it's Uriah Hall, just because of what we have seen from Vitor Belfort over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I wouldn't even frame it like that. It's similar, but I would frame it like, who do I have less faith in winning? And then I'll go with the other guy. And I have less faith in Vitor. I know it's the exact same question you asked, but I'm more negative about it. Vitor's old, but both, and Uriah's inconsistent, right? Like, think about how crazy it was the night he went out and knocked out Gegard Mousasi with a flying knee. It was a bit of come to Jesus moment afterwards because obviously he lost three in a row, but you laid it out in the beginning of the podcast. Like, the three fighters he lost are probably three of the top six middleweights in the world in Whitaker, Mousasi, Brunson. I mean, that just depends on where you probably put Brunson. But anyways, moral of the story is I'm less confident in Vitor just because it does seem he has his eyes on the end of his career, and that's always a dangerous place to be. And also, all of the ring time he has had, all those shots he's taken to the head, etc., I think kind of leaves him more prone to get knocked out. I think both these guys, but especially Uriah, are going to be fishing for a knockout. But it's worth noting, even though Uriah Hall is my pick, this is a very close fight. because it's likely going to come down to who makes the more drastic mistake early on.
This thought just came to my mind, and I don't know why it came to my mind, but let's say Vitor loses on Sunday. Probably his last fight in the UFC, most likely. Is his next fight as an alternate in the Bellator heavyweight tournament?
I hope not, but that's not without the realm of possibility. Is he going to win the tournament would be the question. I don't think so, man. I think this might be his last fight. But honestly, I don't know, man. There's got to come an end of the road to these careers that never seem to end.
I think he's one of those fighters that I just don't see him being the one walking away. Someone's going to have to take it from him to where, you know, basically someone, you know, unfortunately there will always be a promoter out there that would promote a Vitor Belfort fight. And, you know, unfortunately it's a sad truth, but I just, you know, a guy like Vitor, you know, if he doesn't win, you would almost, and if it kind of goes down the way I think it's going to go down, and the fact that I don't see this fight getting out of the first round, you would kind of hope that if he does not get the win, that there would be someone around him that would say, you know, Vitor, it's time.
Yeah, but there's no way anyone around him is if someone was around him, this fight wouldn't be happening. It's crazy to think this guy fought at UFC 12. Mm-hmm. Like he went to a tournament final and fought Scott Ferroza. Like, when Vitor entered the UFC, like, if there was like a ranking of UFC fighters, like, Tank Abbott might be towards the, like, he might make the ranking, like, for top 15 or something. That's a lot of time to just train, much less compete. Imagine training in mixed martial arts for 20 consecutive years. Imagine what that grind does to your body. That has to be just, I mean, insane. And if this is Vitor's last fight, this guy is truly a legend of the sport. But I think he's a guy who, I don't know what the right word is. Maybe it's enigma, because it's a fighter who a lot of times when you think of quote-unquote legends of a sport, you always kind of romanticize what they did. It's always positive, etc. But for Vitor, man, he represented some super highs and some super lows, right? Between the highs of all of his violent knockouts, mm-hmm. The emotions surrounding early on in his UFC run regarding his sister, mm-hmm. who just went missing, and he just put Instagram post, I believe, remembering her. Like, that was so awful, but it was also like it was just an emotional point that. To me, that was like a real human deal that kind of separated like the just blood sport into this is a fighter that you kind of root for to, you know, overcome this adversity or figure out a way to deal with it. That was that early incarnation of his career where you just had so much empathy for the guy. He was the phenom. He competes in Pride, has success elsewhere. And then obviously, he has the resurgence in the UFC. And obviously, the negative is the TRT nonsense. That was a big negative.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up because, you know, he's always going to be the face of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and look, it wasn't like he was the only guy, you know, on TRT. There was, you know, plenty of guys that were, you know, on that. But he is always going to be the face. And I think that's always going to be something that kind of, it's always going to hang over his head no matter what. That, you know, fans are all, I feel that you're going to think of that just as much as you think of just, you know, some of the great nights he had in competition.
Totally. I think that's going to be a major tentpole of what we remember him for. I mean, he's going to be the face of TRT and the mouth is going to be Chael Sonnen. I'll tell you that much. I think it's important to, well, I'm really like I'm a person who thinks like Barry Bonds and Mark McGwire, and maybe not Sammy Sosa, but maybe Sammy Sosa. Like all those guys should be in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Have you seen what Sammy looks like now?
No, it's probably scary, right?
No, you just Google it. Just Google it. Right. It's like scary. Yeah, yeah. I saw someone post a picture on like Twitter a couple weeks ago. Yeah,
he changed races.
You wouldn't recognize him, yeah.
That's
But, you know, the crazy thing, I remember, you know, I mean, what was that, 2001, 2002-ish? No, that was like 99. So I was like right into high school, going into college. I mean, and that revitalized baseball. You know, and, you know, the Hall of Fame is vote is coming up. And by the way, if you want to hear, you know, that talk, we have Inside the Dugout here on Radio Influence with Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera, where they did talk about the PED era, which kind of, I mean, look, in the UFC and MMA, we had a TRT era. Mm-hmm. And that time, there's not going to be an asterisk next to it in the record book, but I think in a lot of people's minds, there's an asterisk.
Yeah, yeah, and to me, look, I'm not going to forget the negativity that I brought, because that was a really bad deal, because it is important to demonize those guys during that point that they're committing that error, because the difference between cheating in baseball and cheating in mixed martial arts is the danger level.
Exactly.
The danger level of your upgrading your body, and you look at the knockouts Vitor had. That was scary. He was doing real damage. I mean, imagine if a fighter like Francis Ngannou was juicing. Imagine how – I mean, maybe he is, but he probably isn't. I would assume he isn't. But imagine if you took what he had now and you added, like, a steady regimen of steroids. He would literally knock people's heads off. Like Francis Ngannou is, like, already, like, testing the limits of human ability. What a person can take when they're on the receiving end. Imagine if that got amplified by a significant percentage based on like hardcore illegal, you know, performance enhancing drugs. That is scary.
I've always said this. I think in terms of that kind of stuff, the scary part is the regional scene, because there essentially is no drug testing. And by the way, speaking of anti-doping, if you have not listened to Jeff Nowitzki's appearance on Joe Rogan's show, whatever your thoughts are of Jeff Nowitzki, and since that interview, I've really learned that you're one way or the other. It doesn't seem like anyone's in the middle. But a very interesting conversation, I would say. You know, obviously the UFC put him on a show where, you know, look, it's not going to be too hard-hitting, but I thought Joe did a very good job, you know, just the supplement industry, you know, about, you know, you need to make sure if you're taking any supplements that they're third party certified. And if you are taking some of this third party certified and you do get popped for something and it ends up being a contaminated supplement, you can get off with a warning. It was very interesting. Also, the very end of the podcast, a little device that they're using, that USADA's using to collect blood. A very interesting you know, conversation. I know I'm doing a podcast this week with Sam Kaplan. We're going to talk a lot about that. But if you haven't listened to that show or watched that show and you want to get informed about anti-doping, a lot of great information was on that podcast.
That sounds interesting. I'm glad that there is – I'm glad Joe Rogan's doing that podcast, because it's just good to get guys who are really kind of leading the institutions of the sport to explain what the hell's happening, because the nuances – are very much things that I am not personally aware of. But I've always been from looking at it from a very simplistic point of view. And sure, there are more complexities. And that sounds really good. I think I do think just going back to Vitor, the positive side is worth remembering as well, because he did just create insane moments. And even the very opening moments of his UFC run were truly tremendous as the young phenom. But this could be his last fight, and it would be almost a poetic way to go out if he does get knocked out, or if he does get the knockout. If it would be poetic in that, when I do think of Vitor Belfort inside the mixed martial arts cage, what I do think of is violence. Yeah. And there's a good chance we're going to see that in the coming event. But my pick's Uriah Hall, dude. Who you got?
Yeah, I got Uriah Hall as well. I just, once again, more faith in him. You know, than I have in Vitor Belfort. Now, the other two fights on the main card are two fights that I'm very interested in. You know, Paige VanZant and Jessica Rose Carr. Of course, Paige moving up to 125 pounds, so we'll see what she looks like. And, you know, we haven't seen her in well over a year. The last time we saw her was when she lost to Michelle Waterson back at UFC on Fox 22. Now she takes on Jessica Rose Clark. She was supposed to fight at UFC 216 against Jessica Eye. However, she ended up pulling out of that fight due to a back injury. And of course, Jessica Rose Clark made her UFC debut back in November, got a win over Beck Rawlings, a split decision win at UFC Fight Night 121. And I think for me, it's just, what interests me about this fight is kind of the intrigue of what Paige VanZant could look at, like, at 125 pounds. We don't know a lot about what the UFC's plans are for that 125-pound title. You know, is Montano going to defend the title against Eubanks? Of course, they were supposed to fight for the title initially. Or if Paige goes out there and has a great performance, does she get the next title shot?
Yeah, I think so. I think she could easily get shotgun to the title shot. It makes sense. Paige is a star. People know who Paige VanZant is. And I would probably think she'd be the favorite against anybody that was on the show. It makes sense.
And you talk about how much of a star Paige VanZant is. You know, Wikipedia is a great source. And, you know, and a lot of her Wikipedia page, the first part is about, you know, the Ultimate Fighting Championships. But, you know, I always go down to the record. The record is like the last thing on her profile. Before you get to actually her MMA record, we've got the media appearances of, you know, when she was on Dancing with the Stars, on Chopped, her book release, and also her personal life before you actually get to her MMA record. So that just kind of shows how much of a star she is outside of MMA. But, you know, the question is does that lead to viewership on Sunday? Of course, you know, the UFC is going to have a great lead in from, you know, the NFL game on Fox, which is the 440 is the late game on Sunday. So obviously you're going to see a lot of commercials for the UFC event. I wonder how many of those commercials will feature Paige as opposed to the main event.
I would say it's probably going to be mostly like tied together, where you're going to see Paige in the main event, but Paige is, to me, and look, put it this way. If Paige was the main event, and the main event was in Paige's slot, you wouldn't see the main event guys in the slot. So it makes sense though, because like Paige VanZant is, if she wins, going to be someone you can main event on TV and do well in the ratings. People want to see successful women's MMA fighters. We're going to talk about Cyborg in a little bit, but I need to continue to beat this point home, because in the pre-fight show, that Cyborg fight, I talked about how I thought that buy rate was going to be bad. I think there's a chance it's like the third best buy rate last year, which is understanding that there's a really big gap between the second and third, because it's like near a million and then like 300,000. But I think that Cyborg fight may have done 300,000 pay-per-view buys, which is crazy. So Paige VanZant, real big opportunity for her. As a draw, makes sense. This is the best time for her to ever be champion, because the competition will never be worse. It'd be nice to get the title around her waist, because, like, again, she's a look, man. She's a 23-year-old working on an autobiography, so surely she's interesting or getting a payday. I can't even imagine writing. To me, the only people who are like 23 or younger that should be writing autobiographies is like that girl Malala, who survived like really awful circumstances in Pakistan. So like you got to be like that to me to be interested in your autobiography if you're 23. Moral of the story, Jason, is this. Jessica Rose Clark is a very tough fighter, a fighter who did miss weight at flyweight, but she was a late replacement, like 2 weeks notice, I think, against Beck Rowland. She missed the weight by like 2 pounds. Very well-rounded, and I think scrappy would be the word. I think Paige VanZant is going to be more athletically superior, may not be bigger. What I would say is what this fight is going to tell you is what to expect for Paige VanZant in 2018. If she comes out flat, this tells you potentially she may not have been putting the proper work she needed to put in order to have success, understandably so, because there are more opportunities outside the cage. Or two, she's going to showcase a dominant effort, showcase a commitment to the sport that will make you think not only is she going to contend for the title, she's going to win the championship. So along the line, I'm leaning towards Paige VanZant, though. I just feel like she has more upside. There's a lot more I like in terms of winning the scrambles against a fighter like Jessica Rose Clark and outpointing her to win a decision.
And the betting public is not really high on Paige VanZant. She did open up as a favorite in this fight at -145, but now she is actually a slight underdog at +105. So it kind of tells you how the betting public sees Jessica Rose Clark. She was now at -125 as a recording of this podcast. And, you know, this is a tough one for me to call. I tend to say Paige Van Zandt, but I'm going to go Jessica Rose Clark. I think there's a lot of questions around Paige. What did she look like at 125? But I'm going to go with Jessica Rose Clark, and obviously you're going more with the upset here in Paige Van Zandt.
Yeah, it's not out of the question that Jessica Rose Clark could challenge for the title with the win here either. And she's obviously less of a star, so you're probably going to feel the need to go to Eubanks instead, just because it just feels like the right thing to do almost. But Jessica Rose Clark may be the best flyweight currently in the division, which won't be for long, because we all know the fighters that are going to make the move. But as it stands, I think the reason why Rose Clark is the favorite here, why it shifted, is she's just fairly talented. She showcased that against Beck Rollins, and she is certainly going to be a tough test, but a needed one for Paige Van Zandt. And to me, Paige has showcased real great potential early on in her career. This is a fighter who has showcased potential, and to me, a fighter that's kind of like has showcased another fighter who has shown potential and then has exceeded that expectation above and beyond would be Kamaru Usman, right? He has just taken what you saw, that the gifts that he's had, and he's turned those gifts into deadly weapons. What a phenomenal fighter. To me, this could be a showcase opportunity for him against Emil Meek.
And it wasn't that long ago that we were sitting here on this podcast talking about, you know, what happens if someone stops the takedowns of Kamar. But we saw in his past couple of fights, I mean, you see the evolution of his striking. And this is a guy that there is people in the industry that believe he is, you know, this guy could be the UFC welterweight champion a year, 18 months from now. You know, obviously, you know, there may not be a lot of guys who want to sign up to fight Kamaru Usman, but if you're looking for a reason to watch UFC Fight Night 124 on Sunday, Kamaru Usman's got to be at the top of that list.
Yeah. His opponent, Emil Meek, is no stranger to being an underdog and winning. Go back, look at his ability to win the Vanator welterweight championship against Rosemir Palhares. Emil Meek is a fighter that is undervalued, but he's going up against just an absolute machine, Kamaru Usman. So Emil Meek long-term is a fighter who, if he's undervalued, may be a play when it comes to picks. But Kamaru Usman is not the right play here, picking against Kamaru. Just because Kamaru, again, just given what we've already seen out of him, he should be a heavy favorite. And the big deal for him is fight in and fight out. What ends up happening is things we haven't seen out of him become a new aspect of his game. The development has been at a rapid rate, which gets you excited about the future and gets you excited to see if he's going to continue to add things. If this, we'll see something different here. But I think Usman has showcased just excellence at every aspect of the fight game, and I'm pretty confident that's going to continue at the UFC Fight Night card.
And he's a 6-1 favorite, by far the biggest favorite on the card. The second biggest favorite on the card is actually a man that's going to be the opening matchup of the fight card on UFC Fight Pass, Kung Ho Kang, who is -320. So, I mean, look, and Kamar should be a huge favorite. It would be a fairly big upset. I mean, you know, taking the gambling odds out of it, it would be a massive upset at 170 pounds. And, you know, and obviously my pick is Kamaru Usman. And it's going to be really interesting to kind of see what is next for him in the UFC. Would not be surprised if ultimately he gets a top five guy in his next fight. Wouldn't surprise me if the UFC wants to do him and Colby Covington.
Yeah, it does seem like this is a bit of a... So, I mean, Emil Meek may be the toughest fighter Usman's ever fought, but coming off his last win over Sergio Moraes, it did feel like he was going to get a dramatic step up in competition. That didn't happen. I think with the win over Emil Meek, that's when we'll see the hyper jump. Colby Covington would absolutely represent a hyper jump, because despite the fact that Colby probably has taken it too far, like spoiling Star Wars, like screw that guy, he is a fighter who the next time he fights, I think we're all going to care, and I think that makes a lot of sense. It's gonna probably, that fight's probably going to be the worst thing to happen to Colby Covington, because to me, if I'm Colby Covington, the last guy I would want to fight is Kamaru Usman. But for Kamaru, geez, that's what you want, man, a fight just like that to put you on the map when it comes to having the credentials and the spotlight to challenge for a welterweight championship.
I mean, you look at 170, there's so many guys you're just kind of interested to see how they develop over the next year. And the two guys that, really three guys that jump out to me, you know, the fresh blood of that division, Usman, Santiago Ponzinibbio, and Darren Till.
Yeah, that's a really exciting division. And they all represent fighters that have the ability to do different things. And that's the most exciting thing. I think you look at Ponzinibbio, you get really excited about his stand-up. For Darren Till, a fighter, not only with his stand-up, but also his jiu-jitsu. And for Usman, a guy who I think has the takedown ability to go along with the striking. So, welterweight, if you begin to start kind of taking stock of each division, I think 170 pounds is a division that has a lot of like upside, a lot of potential, and a lot of young talent that you can kind of get look forward to. Cause, and not only do you have guys like that, but again, a fighter like Colby Covington, who is just going to stoke the flames. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what 170 does. I mean, it's gonna, if Usman does become a champion, this is not going to be a cakewalk. He's going to have to go through fighters who are in similar positions to him, and it's going to be a dog-eat-dog world.
When you look at the preliminary card, which you've mentioned a couple matchups already, a part of this preliminary card, a little note I saw on Michael Johnson, I think I saw it late last week. He's not weighed 145 pounds since, I believe he said, since he was 13. Maybe I'm wrong, but it was a teenager the last time he's weighed 145 pounds. And, you know, so obviously we'll see what happens on Friday when, well, on Saturday, excuse me, when he steps on the scales against Darren Elkins. You know, Thiago Alves, you know, returning, you know, him against Zach Cummings, that's one that jumps out to me. You know, the feature prelim on UFC Fight Pass, Jessica Eye fighting in her natural weight class of 125 pounds. Obviously, things have not gone well for her in the UFC. We've seen how that's gone, but, you know, she just was not big enough at 135, but now being at 125 pounds, taking on Kalinja Fahea, that's one that, you know, has me interested. You know, those were probably the three fights on the prelims that stick out to me the most.
Yeah. I mentioned the other one, Krause and White. That to me just might just be a great fight. I think James Krause is going to win there, but Alex White is a real, real, just a firecracker of a fighter. And I think that's a good one. I mean, that's a very important fight for Jessica Eye, given, you know, lack of success. Thiago Alves, I think, is going to have a tough time against Zach Cummings, but that to me is just a fight at 170 with maybe not the sexiest names, but fighters who are highly skilled, and a fighter in Thiago Alves who just, I mean, he needs a win in order to kind of beat up Father Time. That's his biggest opponent. And to me, the one fight I'm looking forward to the most is Elkins Johnson. The yeah. fact that he hasn't weighed at 145 since 13 is super concerning when it comes to the weight scale. I'm assuming we're going to see a couple fighters at this card miss weight. I think Darren Elkins is going to be a bit too much for Michael Johnson, though. I really like the foundation of Elkins' game. Elkins doesn't have the pressure of trying to make weight at a new weight class that Johnson's going to have. And I think Elkins is going to know exactly what he wants to do and execute that game plan and welcome Michael Johnson at 145 with a loss. But Michael Johnson could very well be new blood at 145, could showcase kind of the highs we saw at him at lightweight, and could turn things around. I just personally am picking Elkins in this fight.
Yeah, it was last time he was at 145 was when he was 13 years old. So, you know, obviously, you know, I'm sure he probably did a test cut or, you know, to kind of, you know, see how his buyers are going to react getting below 155 pounds. But that is definitely a matchup that has me interested. Of course, your prelims will be on FS1, your TV prelims on FS1. That'll start at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And 5 p.m. out on the West Coast. Of course, main card, 10 p.m. Eastern time, 7 p.m. Pacific time. And, of course, you're going to have five fights on UFC Fight Pass, and that will start at 6 p.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. Pacific time. And we mentioned about some of those fights that definitely have us interested. A part of that, yeah, looking at the betting odds quickly, Daniel, as we kind of wrap up talking about this fight card, just looking at underdogs, I tell you, Thiago Alves at plus 180 kind of sticks out to me. I could see him win a very close decision.
Yeah, I could too. I like Zach in that fight, but Alves certainly has the ability to win that fight for sure. I don't disagree with you, man. I think that there's smart. That's a smart pick right there. In terms of my pick, I would just go straight up with. I picked Paige VanZant. I picked Darren Elkins at 135. Just looking up and down the betting odds here, isn't anything else I really like, though. I guess maybe Vitor Belfort at plus 235 would be the other one where that, to me, could go either way. But you may have hit the nail on the head with Thiago Alves at plus 180.
Yeah, and just kind of tell you how the betting people think about this. Belfort wins by decision, plus 965. Hall wins by decision, plus 417. So it obviously tells you how they think you know, that fight's going to go down. But, you know, overall, you know, I'm looking for this. But, of course, I'm really looking forward to next weekend. The UFC and Bellator card. Also, you've got a boxing fight on Showtime. So definitely going to have to go out somewhere. I'll tell you, actually, I don't know if I talked about this last week on the podcast. I went out and watched the UFC pay-per-view. The Chris Cyborg fight at Dave and Buster's. Really like their setup. It might be a spot I might have to go to just because they have so many TVs all right there in front of you at the bar. And just say, hey, can you put one on Spike, one on the pay-per-view, and one on Showtime?
That's going to be one of the craziest nights, man. And I don't know how we're going to – I have no idea how we're going to digest it all.
Yeah, that's going to be the tough thing. That's going to be – that's really going to be an interesting thing on social media. Next Saturday night, of how are people taking in the fight, you know? And, you know, you look at that Bellator card, which I think is a very good Bellator card. It's not getting a lot of talk. I mean, even with the heavyweight tournament, even though, you know, they did put out the first countdown special, which was about Rampage and Chael Sonnen, where they make a bet about Rampage saying, you know, I'll give you 10,000 every time you take me down, which, you know, that's one of those fights that, the way I look at it is either Rampage knocks Chael out probably somewhere in probably the first, early second round, or it's a fight where Chael Sonnen wrestles Rampage for 15 minutes.
I mean, I'm such an idiot. Like, for some reason, I thought there was 2 weeks in between this upcoming card and the pay-per-view. But no, there's not. It's 7 days. I don't know why. I think it's because I was looking at the date as we stand now and be like, oh, the 20th, that's a long time. No, that's a week away from... anyways, moral of the story is, Jesus, I'm not prepared for this, actually. Oh, my gosh.
I mean,
how am I going to watch this? And I'm also a big wrestling fan. Like, there's wrestling going on, too. And, I mean, I'm going to watch both these cards because, oh, God, I love, like, the top three fights of Bellator 192, man. I love Sonnen and Jackson. I mean, I don't love it, actually. That's too strong. But I want to see Rampage pay up, like, $30,000 through takedowns.
Like, when I look at the UFC and Bellator card, to me, my number one fight clearly is Stipe Miocic and Francis Ngannou. I guess apparently on Ariel's show on Monday, Stipe basically came out and said, hey, I think the UFC wants Ngannou to win, which I think is something we've been talking about for about 3 weeks from now. But to me, my number two fight for that weekend is Douglas Lima, Rory McDonald.
Yeah, it's close. Well, not really. That's probably going to be more fun to watch than Volkan and Cormier. It's weird to say that a Bellator championship fight's something I'm looking forward to more than a light heavyweight championship fight.
Man, it's tough for me to get excited for Ozdemir Cormier.
I know, I understand.
Volkan's got a puncher's chance, but if he doesn't knock out Cormier in the first minute, I don't see him win. I just see Daniel taking him down and pounding him out.
You're right. That's the whole fight. That is literally the whole fight. And Volkan's a weak challenger. I mean, and obviously he's got the legal issues, which I guess I don't care about, whatever. I'm looking forward I'm looking forward to Rampage Sonnen. And then obviously the other fight, Yamauchi and Chandler. But like Rob Font and Thomas Almeida represents just great potential for violence. It's going to be interesting to see what the pay-per-view lineup is. Do they have the pay-per-view lineup set?
Yes, it is.
What is it?
The other three fights on the card, which I'll pull up. I believe it's Cater Burgos, Vellante Barossa, Almeida Font, but I can.
Okay.
There's a UFC press website that I'll check out here quickly while I talk about that. But I'll tell you, in the Bellator card, Karahanyan Corrales is a nice fight at 145 pounds. I like that matchup as well. I'm actually trying to get Michael Chandler here on the podcast next week. Hopefully we can have him on. Also trying to get Aaron Pico on the podcast as well. So it'll be interesting to kind of see, you know, you look at that UFC card. I mean, look, it's very top heavy. You know, for the hardcore fight fan, yeah, they're going to look at, you know, the Almeida Font fight is a fight that I'm really looking forward to. Hopefully I can get Rob on the podcast next week. But yeah, when you look at your top five fights on this card, you know, it's in terms of the UFC card, I mean, look, it's a two title fight, and that's ultimately what is getting you to the pay-per-view. But looking at it right now, the top five fights will be Miocic, Ngannou, Cormier, Ozdemir, Cater Burgos, Vellante Barossa, and Almeida Font. Those will be your five fights on the pay-per-view. And Julio Arce, I'm interested to see him make his UFC debut.
Yeah, man, he's been a name on the peripheral for just such a long time, and ability to see him will be good. Pantoja, Dustin Ortiz is another fight I'm very much looking forward to. Man, Gleison Tibau still in the UFC. That's crazy.
First fight back from his suspension.
Yeah.
Remember, he got two years.
I don't remember, but I'm not surprised. Having watched him for such a long time. I'm assuming he got popped for some type of performance enhancer.
I'm trying to look up what it was.
It's EPO, which these are just a bunch of words. I don't know anything. This first sentence of the Wikipedia, ethypropotin, also known as hematopotin, is a glycoprotein cytokine secreted by the kidney in response to cellular hypoxia. Like, I don't know what any of those words are, but I'm assuming it's bad stuff. Gleason Tibau, shame on you.
Yeah, it's USADA describes EPO as a synthetic hormone used to stimulate the body's production of red blood cells, thereby increasing oxygen transport and aerobic power.
Sounds like it's not a boner pill, Tibau. That's all I can say. Dude, these pay-per-view cards, I gotta say, like, they're kind of bad. Like,
221's awful.
Yeah.
I put out the 221 main card, and I wasn't – I just put out what it was. I think people were putting out that I was being negative about it. I was just saying, hey, this is what it is. But I had a lot of people say, hey, it's a fight night card with a title fight, and it's kind of hard not to agree with that.
Dude, they're putting out Tai Tuivasa versus Ciryl Asker, Jake Matthews and Li Jingling, Tyson Pedro and Cyperbek Safarov. That's your main card?
Yeah, that's your five-fight main card, yes.
No, dude, this is a bad – I mean, this is like – why are people – can you – I mean, look, Pedro Safarov will probably have a finish. Tuivasa Asker will probably have a first-round finish. It will probably be fun to watch while it's happening. But when it comes to straight-up importance, you're asking people to spend $60 for one fight. Hunt Blades isn't even that compelling. That's actually not a very compelling fight at all. And it's like, it's awful to ask your consumer, if you give me $60, I'm only going to reward you with one fight.
Like, look, I love Whitaker Rockhold. Love that fight. I mean, look,
and
I've talked about this podcast. I do marketing for a sports bar. And I can tell you, we've already had a conversation about this pay-per-view. It is not cheap for a sports bar to buy a UFC pay-per-view. It's not. And my job is not to be an advocate for the UFC and, hey, we need to have MMA on. My job is to say what's best for the business. It's a tough sell. I'm just, you know, and, you know, my boss asked my honest opinion. I said, look, great title fight. You've got two heavyweight fights that most likely are going to end in knockout, probably in the first round, early second round. But overall, from a MMA perspective, you've got four fights on the main – I mean, all five fights on the main card are essentially for the Australian fan, but when you look at the North American audience, they're all tuning in just for that main event. And the UFC has always maintained this. We're not boxing where it's a one-fight pay-per-view, but you look at 221, it'll be interesting to see how they sell this pay-per-view to the MMA fan because I love – Whitaker Rockhold, but I mean, you're essentially telling your fans, if you're putting over $60, that's the entire reason why you're putting over $60.
Yeah, man. Robert Whitaker represents a fighter that the UFC needs to turn to a star because he's really good at fighting, and they've given him a platform that has got all kinds of cracks in his week, and this fight may be one that happens in a forest where no one knows what happens because it just won't have the attention because it is surrounded. Look, it's going to be a great card to watch because watching Whitaker defend the title in Australia is going to be quite an event. But I just think it's going to be a hard sell for individuals buying the pay-per-view or bars buying the pay-per-view.
I mean, you realize we are about to hit a stretch of 8 straight weeks with a UFC event?
Yeah, I'm really sad. I've really turned a corner from the beginning of the podcast till now.
But
the beginning of the podcast, I thought we were having a 2-week break, but no, it's nonstop, and it's like, dude, they're gonna put Eric Anders in the main event of a fight night card, which is like, he's good, but Jesus, that's not a main eventer. today.
It's the main event because it's Machida. That's the reason that fight's the main event. Dotson Munoz is a co-main event of that fight card. I mean, you look at there are some headliners I love coming up. Holloway Edgar, it appears that's going to be the main event of UFC 222. I know that they really wanted Conor McGregor to be the main event of that fight card, but Holloway Edgar, one of the best fights UFC can put on in 2018. And for as much as the talk of the money fight, the super fight we hear in the UFC, how do you not love Max Holloway? This guy's just like, keep lining him up, and I'm going to knock him down. I'm going to fight every 3 months. Like, how are you not a fan of Max Holloway?
Yeah, man. Max Holloway, if he beats Edgar, like, this guy has scary potential for how great he could be. Like, there are a couple guys waiting in the arms to really take a shot at being called the best ever. And this guy's so far away from it. But he's a guy you got your eye on. Like, he could do this. So I don't know what's going to happen against Edgar, but Max Holloway is absolutely, Jason, one of the fighters I look forward to watching the most, because, like, it seems like all he cares about is fighting, and he does it super freaking well. And Frank Edgar, again, is probably going to be the toughest guy he'll ever fight at 145. I don't know if he'll have a tougher challenger.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And Max is only 26 years old. Turned 26 in December.
Yeah, those are the guys you identify early on. Like, this guy could chase history. DJ is another one, obviously, and he may in fact be the best fighter of all time as we speak. I mean, he's going to have to go up to 135, though, and beat either Cruz or Garbrandt or somebody, or Dillashaw. Like, I think the 130, winning a championship at 135 would kind of solidify Demetrius Johnson as the best ever. But for Max Holloway, like, long term, it might be going up to 155 and winning the title there. Long term. But as we stand in 2018, the first part of 2018, you're right, the main events are rock solid. Holloway Edgar, the heavyweight championship fight, the middleweight championship fight, even some of these fight night main events, like Donald Cerrone and Yancy Medeiros, to me, is just going to be crazy. It's going to be interesting to see what it main events at the UFC on Fox card in Orlando. But otherwise, everything looks rock solid.
By the way, we were speaking about next weekend, Bellator 192. And, of course, we all know Jimmy Smith no longer a part of Bellator, which I personally think is a huge loss. Bellator announced on Tuesday that it has come to an agreement with John McCarthy to serve as a color commentator for Bellator 192 next Saturday. Very interesting that that's the guy they turned to for that event as a color commentator.
Yeah, very interesting, because it's like he's going to go from the broadcast booth to the cage probably next week or something. Like, that's weird for an official. Imagine Jeff Triplett or like a NFL referee doing a broadcast gig and then reffing next week.
That's got to be a odd predicament it puts him in, though, you know, because obviously you're still an active official. It makes you wonder if it comes to a situation where you have to be critical of a commission, how does that affect his – I mean, honestly, his big time gig in terms of reffing fights, but it was also announced by Bellator that Chael Sonnen has signed an extension to remain part of the Bellator broadcast, and he'll be working alongside Mike Goldberg and Mauro Ranallo. And losing Jimmy Smith, I think, is a huge loss for that broadcast. There's plenty of qualified people that can go in there, but that's a massive loss for Bellator.
Yeah, man, they went from a guy who really excelled at broadcasting to names. That's the thing they made. They made the deal. They're like, we have a guy who knows how to broadcast, he knows MMA. And they went to, Chael Sonnen is a name, and so's, John McCarthy. And John McCarthy is like an interesting pick because he has a lot of respect, and he's set a reputation of like going against the grain of things and showing that he won't be held to biases or whatever. And he'll probably provide an interesting perspective. But, Jimmy Smith, to me, is no-brainer, needs to go to the UFC. If they're making a trade of Jimmy Smith for Mike Goldberg, UFC won that trade.
Oh, I mean, I my gut feeling, just to listen to what Jimmy's saying, it to me, it sounds like he's on his way to the UFC at some point. The thing that shocked me, and, you know, I think for people who are not in the television or radio game, they don't understand this. I am shocked that he does not have a non-compete for at least 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I can flat out tell you, in terrestrial radio, I had a 6-month non-compete. So when I walked away, from Clear Channel, I never had any, real conversations about going to another radio station. But if somebody wanted to put me on air, I was sitting on the sidelines for 6 months. It's just it's very standard in media deals.
I think maybe that's crazy. Maybe it's just like it was run by people who don't have much experience when it comes to cutting these deals. That has to be it, right? To not put that in a contract?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, when I look at the Bellator, some of the decisions they made on that broadcast, I mean, look, it was going from Sean Wheelock to Sean Grande was a downgrade. And we'll see how this works with one of the things that I'm really big on is for a play-by-play announcer is that they need to have the same color guy or color person. Because you want to gain that familiarity. I mean, it's, look, as long as me and you have been doing podcasts, I mean, it took us time to kind of realize how each one of us talk, I mean, there's still that natural we do interrupt each other every once in a while, but you have to get comfortable with the person you're doing a show with.
Yeah, man. It's like, it's the idea of changing guys every like 3 events or every 4 events or every 5 events or whatever. Is just, it's death for broadcasting, because what you need in broadcasting is chemistry, and you also need trust, like both those things, and you need guys who like each other, and all those things kind of can just be erased by just changing things up. And also, here's another thing, what's important for a broadcaster, I think, is the confidence that they're not going to get fired or taken away, where they don't, like, a broadcaster will play it super conservative if they think if they are themselves too much, that'll risk them losing their opportunity. So, I mean, probably a lot of these guys don't care about, like, being broadcasters. Like, I'm pretty sure Chael doesn't care that much. Like, he'd be content with, just his podcast being a fighter. But if you want to get good broadcasters, being comfortable that you're going to be in the same spot with the same people is, like, one of the most important things to having a good broadcast.
Yeah, it's and by the way, speaking of Bellator 192, going to let you hear my conversation with Jalen Turner, who is going to be a part of that preliminary card you can watch on Bellator.com. Of course, made a big impact on the Bellator prelims last year, nearly 1 year ago, with a quick knockout win. So I had a chance to talk to him. And then following that interview, myself and Dan will talk about some other things going on in the world of MMA. I am now joined by a man that's going to be stepping back inside the Bellator cage Saturday night, January 20th, Bellator 192, be a part of the preliminary card. It is Jalen Turner, takes on Noah Tillis. Jalen, man, I appreciate time. It's been a while since we talked. We talked prior to your Tachi Palace fight last year. You're coming off a win. So what's been going on since the last fight?
Oh, man, I've just been getting back to it, just training hard, training smart. Just preparing for anything that can be thrown at me. I got a lot to deal with. 2018, I want to make some big moves this year,
In terms of training smart, what does that mean for you?
That means training more technically, less injury, staying away from the knuckleheads in the gym, just stuff like that, just training precise.
How much has fatherhood changed you, from the mental side of the game? I mean, do you look at things differently now than prior to being a father?
That's, like, my biggest motivator at this point right now. Like, they say motivation comes and goes. So now I have something that's going to motivate me consistently. Like, when I get tired, I'm like, man, I got to feed my son. Like, when I don't want to go to the gym, I'm like, man, I got to give him some diapers, Like, it's a completely different mindset. So I can't wait to show the people, like, how much hungrier I am now that I do have my son on, like, in this world, It's a whole nother ballgame.
And, of course, anyone who looks at your record will see all the wins come by stoppage in the first round. Do you have a favorite victory?
Favorite victory... I would say last year, Gabriel Green. That was my favorite victory, Bellator.
And as I recall, that was 32 seconds. And one of the things that people notice is your wins come very quickly, a lot of them in under 90 seconds. Is it just simply one of those things of, like, I see that opening, I'm going for it all?
Yeah, anytime I see the opening, I'm going for the kill, you know, no matter what. I study my guys a lot prior to the fights. Like the fights that I don't really do well in, I haven't studied my opponents that good. So I went back to that, just studied them to a T, and I usually have them broken down by the time I even get to the cage. So I just start lining everything up, all the decks connect, and I just put them out.
Have your coaches ever asked you to be more patient?
Never. Never. No. We don't get paid by the round, and they know that, so we just go in there and do our thing. We're ready for three rounds no matter what, but, you know, if the finish comes early, it comes early.
And, you know, one of the things I've been asking guys is about their pro debut, and what do they remember about it? For you, it was a quick victory, 32-second knockout win. What do you remember about that fight as you look back on it now?
I remember feeling like I was already one of the best in the world, and I had a little bit of an ego about me at that time, but, you know, I was still humble as ever, but I felt like I needed to be there, and I felt like I needed to be in a big show already because it was, you know, I was debuted a Bama World Series, you know, so it was it looked pretty surreal, but it felt right. Like, I felt like that's exactly how I need to showcase myself. And the fact that I didn't get looked at as much after that fight is what stands out the most. It's like, man, you got to do so much more than just that.
And, of course, your opponent here, Noah Tillis, his nickname is the Submission Magician. Were you familiar with him prior to getting this opportunity here?
Honestly, I didn't know who this dude was. I was like, who? Like, he, because from what I know, he asked for the fight. He asked to fight me. So I was like, okay, let's see who this guy is. Looked him up. I was like, hell yeah, I'll take this fight in a heartbeat. Let's do it. Submission Magician or not, like, ever since my fight with Richard Leeward, I've been training jiu-jitsu nonstop every day consistently with some of the best practitioners in my area, and I feel confident on the ground. I'm not even worried about his submissions. I'm going to respect him, you know, but I'm not worried about that. Submission Magician, my ass.
When you hear a guy says, I want to fight you, is it a sign? Do you take that as a sign of as disrespect at all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I feel like nobody should want to fight me, but if you accept the fight, that's cool. But if you call me out, I'm kind of like disrespect, like, don't do that. Because it's funny, because when I was 2-0 as a pro, nobody wanted to fight me. So I have a couple losses and everybody wants to fight me. So I was like, all right, let's do it. Like, I'm gonna show you guys I'm still number one. Like, I'm still a top contender. It doesn't matter how many losses I have, I'm not gonna get any more, I promise you that. I'm just here to finish. I'm here to be back on the right track where I should have been from the get-go.
You mentioned your son is the number one motivation. Is the number two motivation for this fight basically saying you picked the wrong fight here, buddy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That as soon as I figured out that he asked for the fight, like, to fight me, I was like, okay, like, did you not see what I did last year? Did you not see the best fight of the year versus me versus Richard Leroy, who's a brown belt, you know? And man, he was heavy, so it was hard to get him off of me. But as far as this dude, Submission Magician, you know, I respect that, but I feel like I've done way more last year than he's done his entire career. So for him to even feel like he has a platform to call me out is kind of like disrespectful. That's how I feel.
You know, so, of course, that fight in Bellator was a year ago. It'll be almost 365 days exactly. I think it'll be 364 days between fights. Yeah. How would you say you are a different fighter now as opposed to then?
I would just say I learned a little bit more of a killer instinct. I've learned a little bit more, you know, a few more tricks of the trade, and I just grew as a professional. I would say that came about with my fight with Richard. You know, that was like the toughest fight I've ever had in my life ever. And I don't think I'll ever match a fight that tough, but it grew me. So I matured a little bit more now. I've learned a little bit more now. I've trained a little bit harder. I'm more well-rounded. I'm ready to go in any situation. I'm more mentally prepared. I'm mentally to go into deep waters. I'm mentally ready to finish fast. I'm mentally ready for 15 minutes. So let's do it. Whoever wants it, let's do it.
I did notice on your Twitter account at Jalen Turner, you mentioned about, as we're talking, we're less than 19 days out. You said, hey, get your tickets now if you haven't. So for those fans that are fans of you that haven't gotten tickets, how can they get tickets for this fight?
You can contact me on Instagram The Tarantula MMA. You can contact me on Twitter. My handle is Jalen Turner. Facebook also Jalen Turner. Or I put my number out there, but yeah, I don't think white people like that.
No, that probably would not be a very good idea. I've seen other fighters do that. I said, man, I wonder if that's a decision that maybe you regret down the road. Tarantula, yeah. The nickname, of course, we talked about your love for tarantulas last time we had you on. Have you gotten any new ones recently?
Nah, man, I've actually gotten rid of a few. I only have about three right now.
Now, yeah. Does your son like to look at them, or does he kind of stay away?
I haven't even really, like, introduced him to them, or, you know, I haven't had him interact with anything. You know, he's still young. He's only a couple weeks, so maybe when he gets older, I'll start showing him the ways.
And, of course, as we're talking here, we're just about 2 weeks out from this fight. As you have visualized how this goes down, I mean, is it another quick stoppage is kind of how you see the victory coming?
I feel like second round. I feel second round in this fight just because I know he's going to come out hard in the first round. Like, I know that for sure. And I might just have to weather the storm and then come out harder the second round and finish him in the later rounds, you know, if need be. But I never predict an early finish. You know, they just end up happening. So we'll see. We'll see. Second round, I'm predicting.
Is the best way to kind of describe the fighting style is just read and react?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. This, man, I'm like computer generated for fighting or something, because I just calculate everything and just take everything out.
And, of course, it's all come up here. January 20th, Bellator 192, of course, part of the preliminary card that fans can watch on Bellator.com if they're not in person there at the Forum in Inglewood, California. Jalen, as always, I appreciate time. And once again, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Once again, Instagram, The Tarantula MMA, Twitter, Jalen Turner, Facebook also, Jalen Turner. That's where you can find me.
And there you have my conversation with Jalen Turner. I appreciate him coming on the podcast. All about his fight coming up next Saturday, Bellator 192. Of course, you can watch his fight a part of the preliminary card on Bellator.com. But, Daniel, we do want to kind of wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by talking about some other news and notes going on in mixed martial arts. And saw this come across on the MMA Reddit, where Dustin Poirier was on the Luke Thomas show on SiriusXM, where he says he only has three fights left on his UFC deal, which was a 8-fight deal, which is kind of amazing. He did explain the fact of, you know, hey, at that point, he needed the money. But, you know, Dustin Poirier, these final three fights left on his deal. I mean, you're talking about if he wins his next two fights, he's realistically in the conversation for a title shot.
Oh, man. This is a high-stakes game for Dustin Poirier. What to do with this contract, man? As it stands today, he's the sixth-ranked lightweight in the world, and he has the ability to hypothetically win two fights or three fights in a row. I mean, look, I'm pretty sure he won't get the championship fight if he has only one fight left on his deal. Yeah. Like, that would be like crazy. That would be so insane. He would have so much leverage if he wins the championship and is then a free agent. But man, he's got a lot of leverage. I don't know what I would tell him. My suggestion would be fight your contract out at least until your last. You have one fight left on the deal.
Yeah, and I think you have to see how these next two fights go.
Yeah, you could get more money than you're quote unquote worth when it comes to what you think of when it comes to name value and Poirier. Talent-wise, he's worth a whole hell of a lot. And I don't really know. I mean, he's going to have to go through some tough fighters. I mean, I know Eddie Alvarez doesn't want to rematch at Poirier.
That's the fight to make to me.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, to me, I would love to see, at some point, Dustin Poirier take on Justin Gaethje.
That was the other fight I was thinking about for him. I mean, to me, that would just be you talk about FS1 headliner, you know, a very good fight for a stack pay-per-view. I mean, those are the Alvarez fight and the Gaethje fight. Maybe Barboza would be another one that
I can't believe he's never fought Barboza. It's crazy how many insanely fun fighters there are to watch at lightweight. Holy moly. Dude, Alvarez, Barboza, Gaethje, Poirier. You could even make the case like Kevin Lee, super excited. Like, dude, that's a hardcore. You could not do anything wrong with that mix of guys in Poirier, Gaethje, Barboza, Alvarez. So, I look, honestly, though, if you're asking me, I don't think he's going to win two straight fights, because I think the next fight after his next fight is going to be a loss. Like, I like just the level of fighter he's going to, unless the UFC really blackballs him and gives him weak opponents, so he has a little less leverage. But that's just stupid. But it's an interesting contract situation nonetheless.
Yeah, yeah, it's very interesting, and you love to hear a fighter be that forward about their contract, because that's really something we don't hear. Also in UFC news, Brad Tavares is offering to be Michael Bisping's final opponent. Of course, Bisping has talked about wanting to have his final fight in London in March. You know, time will tell if that's actually going to take place or not, but when I think about a final fight for Michael Bisping, I like this one.
What do you like about this one?
I think it would be a stand-up fight. I don't see it would be a fight where Brad would be looking to take him to the ground. I mean, I think if anything, he maybe would try to get it into the clinch more than anything else. But then I was looking at Brad Tavares' record. I mean, you kind of forget the guy has won three in a row, and you do understand why he wants this matchup, but you have to go back to 2011, the last time Brad Tavares won a fight by stoppage. January 1st, 2011, UFC 125 against Phil Baroni. Of course, that was the split draw night between Frankie Edgar and Gray Maynard. You look at the rest of that main card, Brian Stann defeated Chris Lieben. Of course, Brian Stann, both those guys now retired. Thiago Silva beat a no contest against Brandon Vera. Of course, Thiago Silva and ACB. Brandon Vera won championships, and you had Dong Yong Kim get a decision win over Nate Diaz, and Clay Guida got a win over Takanori Gomi. And by the way, on the preliminary card that night, which was on ION TV, Dustin Poirier beat Josh Grispy.
I can't believe, I mean, oh my gosh, Josh Grispy, what an awful person. But I can't believe, I definitely saw that card, but ION TV, Jesus. I can't believe that was a channel. I don't remember it, don't recall anything about it. I'm going to fill you this one. And Tavares is a fine fight for sure. A fight Bisping probably lose, because Tavares is quite good, despite not being ranked. I mean, Paulo Costa is the other guy I really like. Here's one that I'm throwing out there. It's going to be, to me, for Bisping, you do two things, Jason. Bisping versus a prospect or an up-and-comer. Bisping versus a name fighter. What if you do, at 205 pounds, I don't know what his injury situation is like, Michael Bisping versus Shogun.
Yeah, I like that one.
I mean, to me is just a name fight.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure that'd be a Fight Pass card.
Yeah, yeah, which would be sad. But
would it be kind of crazy that Michael Bisping would end his career as a main event of two Fight Pass cards?
I know, especially since like that Bisping GSP card probably did such a good number. And then just back-to-back bypass cards. I feel like you got to figure out a way to go on TV, but the timing really screws up putting it on TV.
Yeah, I mean, you got to imagine, you know, because what's that, March 17th, I want to say? So that's the first weekend of the NCAA men's basketball tournament. So you
kind of
tough to put a fight card on TV when you know you're just going to get hammered in the ratings by college basketball.
Well, it helps that the card's on in the morning.
Well, it'd be afternoon.
Oh, is that what time the England, works in England?
Yeah, it's from the East Coast where I am. You know, it's a 5-hour time difference.
Oh wow, that's
so you're talking. You know, if it's an 8 o'clock, you know, start, you're talking, 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, that's deaf. Yeah, they should push that back. There should just be no fight cards run during March Madness. I mean, you just got to respect sports culture, but they don't. So I don't know, man. But you're right. That's an interesting point. You talk about legends, he is one of them. It's going to be interesting how we grapple with the history of MMA, because all these fighters who just seem like normal fighters are going to go down as like historic greats. And, you know, Bisping won't ever go down as like a top five fighter of all time or anything, but Jesus, whenever the UFC needed him, he was there for a fight, no matter how late it was.
I do want to mention questions that we got involving Chris Cyborg. I do got to mention, did get an emailer who did email me last week. Ben emailed me in, and I want to pull up the email, which he did note, and I went back on the podcast to make sure you were calling Chris Cyborg Cyborg Santos, but of course she's no longer Santos. She is Justino. You know, someone asked, said, "Hey, I'm pretty sure her last name's not Santos anymore." So, do appreciate that. But Benno was also, we talked about Ryzen, and he thought that our opinions on Ryzen were a little crazy. He said this. He goes, "Also, both of your opinions on Ryzen are crazy. It was in my top three MMA events of the year. I couldn't make a cast for number one. Just the energy I got watching. It hasn't been replaced by the UFC in a long time. 217 was great, but Ryzen is just different in so many good ways. Gabby missing weight was unfortunate for sure, but didn't impact the event at all. Great break from the assembly line of fights the UFC seems to be stuck in." I actually responded to Ben about this, and basically kind of my point about, you know, the Ryzen card last week, and what I said was more about, you know, my feeling is promotion that there's much more buzz about it right now than a year ago. And that's where I was coming from last week. Is just, I just feel like there was more interest this year than there was a year ago.
Yeah. That's true. Look, man, that Ryzen card was not the third best thing that happened. You're insane. All right. That's insane. You're telling me Kyoji Horiguchi, you know, is a great fighter. I'm sure the atmosphere is great. The idea that the Ryzen final round was the third best card or whatever of 2017 is insane. Now, to be fair, we're probably a bit too harsh on it because it is cool to have an alternative. And there were a lot of talented fighters. The environment is totally different. I get what he's saying. And I'm glad people really enjoy it. And I look forward to see what Ryzen does in 2018. But it's without a doubt, my point was pretty simple. My point was this was an interesting card. But for Ryzen, it was unfortunate that the biggest storyline coming out of their great two nights was the Gabby Garcia thing. That was my whole point. I'm looking forward to see what Ryzen does. I think Japan is like, it's so important to have a prominent Japanese promotion. I love Japanese culture. I'm a big fan of Japanese wrestling. And I'm a big fan of Japanese MMA. There are aspects of the culture that suck, like the idea of putting Gabby Garcia in the ring with a 53-year-old person or whatever. That sucks. But needless to say, Ryzen has put together talent, specifically at bantamweight, with Horiguchi and Ishiwatari and Ian McCall and Anthony Burchak, etc. But I think Ryzen's best days are still ahead of him, too. That's like I think 2018 could represent an even bigger show. But it's just, to me, I think, simply put, Ryzen was absolutely not the third best show last year, but it was a fun one. So I'm glad we got a little Ryzen low.
Speaking of, Chris got this question from DirtyBird212 on Twitter saying, "With Demetrius Johnson talking about how hard it is to defend the title for so long, if Cyborg came over with the Strikeforce, there's no way DJ would still have the record, right?" Thoughts? And actually, before we started recording the podcast, we did a little digging on this. Strikeforce did not enter the UFC till February of 2013. Correct, Daniel? That was the day it was when Ronda made her debut?
Yeah, Ronda Carmouche was then.
And so DJ became the flyweight champion in September of 2012. And just because I think you would have to, even if, you know, let's just say they did a bantamweight and featherweight title on that night, I just think that because of the 145-pound division that Demetrius still would defend the belt more times than Cyborg would at 145 pounds.
Yeah, and he's just fought more since that time period. Even if, you know, even if that hadn't occurred, just look at who's fought more. So it'd be tough for Cyborg to do it, just because for Cyborg, like, she has spent time. She had a couple injuries, I think. The fight pace hasn't been as fast as DJ's. And then obviously, like, being sidelined due to, you know, due to having issues is obviously going to hold her back. And that wouldn't have been prevented if she's in the UFC. Still, though, I mean, she has been dominant for the same period of time. That's certainly true. And she just hasn't had the amount of fights. So, look, Justina's going to be probably the best female fighter of all time, I think. I don't know. It's tough. For a while, I thought it was Rousey. And then, obviously, you know, Holly Holm went in and took that away. But when you talk about dominance, it's going to be a very long time since we'll see someone do what Cyborg has done. Now, the one issue is for Cyborg's dominance, and when you contrast it with Demetrius Johnson, is as weak as the competition is at flyweight, it is so much weaker at women's featherweight. So it's much more impressive what Johnson has done. Just because you look at these fights, the skill level of Joseph Benavidez, Cejudo, all the flyweights Johnson has beaten, is so astronomically higher than Tonya Evinger and Lena Landsberg and Faith Van Dunn that it's hard to compare. But let's not denigrate the success, consistent success Cyborg has had. It has been a historic run that will likely – it won't be topped for a very long time because it takes a very long time to top it.
Yeah, I think the question – what's interesting to me about Cyborg is kind of what's next for her. In a way, I do understand why she's like, no, I'm not interested in a super fight. I want somebody at 145 pounds. And I think that's her way of essentially saying, hey, guys, let's develop this division. Let's get people interested in this division. But the other part of me says, man, I want to see her and Amanda Nunes lock it up.
Yeah, her and Amanda Nunes should fight next. But they should develop a division because it's not sustainable to do super fight after super fight after super fight because they can only do one and then it's done. So they need to develop a division. I understand there's a real hesitancy because the UFC just has not committed to 145. They should, as long as they have Cyborg. And I think it makes sense to be in the Cyborg business because it's shown that her pay-per-view with Holm did real well. Maybe that's a one-off. Maybe it was an anomaly. Maybe it was the right opponent. Cyborg is a name people know, and the UFC needs to provide her the environment to where she can fend off challengers, and they need to cultivate a division. I think both those things can go hand in hand. I think her next fight can be against Amanda Nunes while UFC showcases commitment to Cyborg and begins to develop more of a 45-pound weight class because, again, there are only so many super fights you can go to for Justino.
I think the question that we really haven't heard the UFC really answer is, are they interested in developing a 145-pound division?
Well, I think the answer has been no.
Oh, I think the answer is no, clearly. I think it's all about what one-off fights can we do. You know, the Megan Anderson situation, no one's talking. You know, there's a lot of rumblings out there. You know, people have thrown the USADA rumbling out there, which I don't buy that rumbling at all just because USADA is very transparent. You know, if there was any issue with her and USADA, you would know about it. You know, it's kind of weird how her and her camp have handled that situation. You know, there's just so much uncertainty out there about where she kind of stands and when she actually will make her UFC debut. I mean, I think that she should probably get, you know, kind of a number one contender fight in the UFC. I don't know who you put her against. But, I mean, look, Dana White has said he wants to do Cyborg and Nunes, and, you know, we'll see if that does happen. But, you know, we did mention at the beginning of the show about the UFC event, but there's other MMA events going on this weekend. On Friday, you've got LFA on Access. On Saturday, you can watch ACB. Of course, that's on a Fight and YouTube. And then Saturday as well, you've got Invicta FC 27. Of course, that'll be Sarah Kaufman in the main event of that fight card. LFA a little bit in the news initially. Got to give kudos to James Lynch, who initially put this report out there that he was hearing that LFA had been purchased by Alliance. I have been informed since then that that is a true story. As of recording this podcast, it's not been officially announced, but I imagine that is going to be announced here in the very near future. Curtis Millender is going to be taking on Nick Barnes in the main event of that fight card. I was looking at LFA's calendar. They've got three events in the next 3 weeks. It is amazing as a regional promotion how many events they put on a year, Daniel.
Yeah, man, I think Access TV has just gone out and said, we want combat sports content, and they're going to get combat sports content. It's hard, I think, to make that transition, though, in ownership or whatever, while you have so many shows in a row. But it's going to be interesting to see what changes are implemented to the regional scene and to see if there's any way to do this more efficiently and have more success with people caring about it.
Yeah, I mean, look, here in Florida, there's a lot of local events that go on. You know, you have to have the right ticket sellers. I think that's where, you know, outside looking in on LFA, that's why I kind of wonder is maybe are they not putting the right ticket sellers on the card? And maybe that's why, you know, ultimately they're getting bought here. But, you know, look, they're doing a lot of great things. And the one thing I've always been told about Access TV is they pay a rights fee to these organizations. So there is money exchanging hands, which is always a good thing. I know on the regional scene, it can be kind of tough. You know, it was funny because I'm going to the UFC event in Orlando, and I saw there's a local show here in Tampa do an event the day before, which I was kind of like, I don't know if that's the right day to do an event on when the UFC is, you know, up the road the next day. Where, I mean, look, if you want a good ticket to the UFC, you're paying over $100 a ticket.
Yeah, it's, to me, that's just a bad, bad idea. It's just, you got to understand the demand and where people are going to go first with their hard-earned bucks, and it's not that.
And by the way, speaking of Alliance, they announced late last week that they've signed a deal with the similar Hard Rock Hotel and Casino down in Hollywood, Florida, where they're going to do quarterly events down there. The first one's going to be St. Patrick's Night, March 17th, Saturday. So that did get announced there. But it is good to have some MMA to watch this weekend, Dale. I've missed it a little bit, but I'm looking forward to watching some fights this weekend.
Yep, and as you've confirmed, every weekend until the day we die, we will get MMA. Oh, my God. But, yeah, looking forward to this week. Should be a great night. Great fight night card. Six fights I'm really looking forward to, and I can't wait to break it down.
What's your number one fight on the UFC card?
To me, Choi and Stevens, man. The main event. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, what do you got? Man, God, that's got to be my number one, too, from a fight aspect. I mean, just what – Usman's the guy that intrigues me the most with the card, though.
Yeah, I totally get where you're going with that. And to a similar extent, I would throw Paige VanZant in there just because she's so important to what she can hypothetically bring to women's flyweight is a whole hell of a lot. And if she does ace the test, that's a dramatic shift in there. But she could also certainly flunk it, and that's why I think that's exciting. But, yeah, there's Usman, VanZant, Uriah Hall Vitor fight's exciting. The Elkins Johnson fight is quite important. And then, as I've kind of hit on, I think Alex White, James Krause, real sleeper for fight of the night. And that one could be good.
And of course, that's all going to go down on Sunday in St. Louis at the Scott Trade Center. Of course, we'll recap that fight card next week here on the podcast. Also, as I mentioned, working on a couple interviews for next week's podcast to get you ready for UFC 220 and Bellator 192. Should be a great weekend of fights next weekend. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's episode of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, you can give me a follow on Twitter at Jason_Foy. You can follow Daniel on Twitter at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Of course, you can always listen to this podcast, RadioInfluence.com. Apple Podcast, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play. If you're not subscribing to this podcast on those platforms, really appreciate if you do that. And on Apple Podcasts, really appreciate you leave us a review rating. We love the 5-star review, so really appreciate if you would do that for us. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you hear every week on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Valor Hour Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We are joined by 2018 Knox County mayoral candidate Glenn Jacobs. But millions of WWE wrestling fans know him by another name, and that is Kane.
You're famous in the world of sports entertainment, but you know, a lot of people know that you're kind of also tuned into the MMA scene, particularly here in this East Tennessee region. And your good friend Shamir Peshawar will make her professional debut this weekend at the Knoxville Coliseum for Valor Fights 47. Talk about what we can expect from her in this upcoming debut, and also kind of touch on, you know, there are obvious differences between WWE and MMA, but there are also a lot of similarities, particularly in the fan base. You know, kind of give your take on how those two worlds you know, kind of correlate.
I think Samira's gonna do great. She puts her heart in everything that she does, and I think she's gonna have a terrific debut. I've been to some of the Valor fights, very impressed by the promotion. You know, you guys do a great job. There's a lot of crossover and influence between our businesses, and including boxing as well. You know, Muhammad Ali got his shtick from Gorgeous George. It can be argued that Conor McGregor got his from Ric Flair. So, you know, there's a lot of there really is just a lot of that crossover, right? And you'll see influences from UFC and WWE now and vice versa. And then, of course, I look at one of my opponents at the Royal Rumble, Brock Lesnar, former UFC champion. We have another guy in WWE, general manager, Monday Night Raw, Kurt Angle. People probably don't realize maybe now what a bad man Kurt Angle is. You know, he won the Olympics with a broken neck, won a gold medal, and he was wrestling, fighting against guys that are 50, 70 pounds heavier than he was, and he beat them all. You know, I have no doubt that if Kurt had chosen to pursue a career in MMA, that he would have done very, very well as well. So, you know, there is a lot of that crossover and influence among our sports, and I have the utmost respect for MMA athletes because I know the sort of discipline that it takes to get to the top in that particular arena, and also just the talent, you know, that goes along with that, and the work ethic, and amateur wrestlers. That's, to me, that's the hardest sport. I mean, when I look back, I was not an amateur wrestler, but you know, hear all the stories about what those guys would do. I have a great deal of respect for them. And then, you know, moving forward into the MMA world, I mean, what those guys put themselves through and the heart that it takes to go out there and to compete in that arena is, to me, just, you know, something to be commended.
The Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxendine can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.